Good morning. Turn your Bibles to 1 Corinthians chapter 7. We're going to dive in at verse 25 and get back into our study of 1 Corinthians. And this morning we're going to address the question, is marriage for everyone? Is marriage for everyone? And I think you would probably expect a resounding yes to that question, wouldn't you? Because, I mean, after all, marriage and romance and making that connection always looks something like this.
Into the well, that's all you have to do. And if you hear it echoing, your wish will soon come true. I'm wishing for the one I love to find me.
You? Wait, please. Don't run away.
Now that I've found you, hear what I have to say. One song, I have but one song. One song.
Isn't that the way it is? Some of you are saying, well, it hadn't happened for me quite that way yet. Well, that's just because you need to find a wishing well. Or maybe you hadn't found the right wishing well, or maybe we need to practice. Ho, 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 ho. You get that down, and it'll happen for you, right? Thought it was, you know, in my younger years, I tried showing up with a song a couple times, and I got the reaction of the woman running and locking herself in, but she never came back and looked out the window. Don't quite understand that. Thought it was interesting. She immediately plays hard to get when he shows up. You know, she's going to run and hide, and then she's got to make sure that hair and clothes are all arranged because, you know, that's how it works. And you say, well, you know, that was 1937. Now, people back in those days, they thought that, right? Interesting. June 26th, 2008. Hollywood lives happily ever after. Story in the USA Today talks about the weddings this year, and the movies this year, and the key ingredient is the number of weddings that are portrayed in the movies. In fact, article says, take some blockbusters of the summer, Sex and the City, less about sex and more about a wedding. Indiana Jones and the Kingdom of the Crystal Skull. We've got snakes, skulls, Soviet spies, and it all ends up at a wedding. Mamma Mia, a kooky wedding in gorgeous Greece set to ABBA songs, opening July 18th. Other wedding-dominated romantic comedies or rom-coms of which it's called now, are filling the theaters this year. 27 Dresses, Maid of Honor, What Happens in Vegas. Coming up, Vicky Cristina, Barcelona, The Accidental Husband, Rachel Getting Married, The Proposal, Bride Wars, and When in Rome. Weddings are even in art house films, such as the upcoming The Stone Angel. It appears that Hollywood has got the wedding bug. They interviewed a couple experts in this article. David Polin, editor-in-chief of MovieCityNews.com, here's what he says. He says, for the moment, chick flicks are hot again. And one way to keep up the heat, drop a wedding in the plot. He says, because for 500 years, the fairy tale always ends that way, Polin says. It's harder to say you have a happy ending if they just end up living together, even if that's more true to real life. Another filmmaker, film producer, Gant Niederhoff, says oral literature, Norse and Greek mythology, Shakespeare plays, Jane Austen novels, the most enduring human stories often culminate in a wedding. Niederhoff says, it coincides with our interest in romance, love, and procreation. It's as old as time. And finally, Annie Thompson, film historian, says, quote, women are hardwired from birth to believe that the right marriage is going to lead to happiness, and for the most part, that hope still resides in their hearts. We started a group for college folks, Cindy and I did, this summer, called our College Connection, and we've been meeting together on Thursday nights. We've had a great group, had a great turnout. This week we were down a little bit. The college interns were all out of town, so we only had 80 in our group, and we've been discussing the whole issue of relationships. And so I asked them at the beginning of the discussion, how many of you in this room believe that at some point in your life you're going to get married? And as I scanned the room, I didn't see everybody, but I think it was pretty close to 100% of the people in the room raised their hand saying, yes, I plan at some point in my life to get married. And some of you are saying, well, of course. That's what normal people do, right? That's what everybody does. Well, interestingly enough, in the passage that we're going to be looking at today, Paul is addressing this issue to the Corinthian church, because as people are coming to faith from paganism, and they're converting to Christianity, and they're starting to embrace this new Christian lifestyle, they're asking a lot of questions about what they should or shouldn't do. Some of the people in the text we're going to be looking at this morning are already engaged, and they're wondering, now that I'm a Christian, should I continue with my engagement and get married, or should I break off my engagement and stay single? Other single people are asking the question, should I get married at all under the current circumstances that I find myself? And so Paul addresses this issue in the passage we're going to be looking at today. As we look at this passage today, the first principle on your outline, you're going to notice if you grab your outline out of your bulletin, the first principle is that remaining single has some benefits that must be considered. Remaining single has some benefits that must be considered. Look at verse 25 of chapter 7. He says, now about virgins. Now, stop right there and just understand, he's not talking about divorced people. He's not talking about widowed people. He's talking about people that have never slept with anybody, and therefore they're single. So he's talking about people that are single, never married before. So he's addressing people who have never been married, who are considering getting married. So this would be like first marriage, first time, I'm going to do this thing called marriage. He says, now about virgins, I have no command from the Lord, but I give a judgment as one by whom the Lord's mercy is trustworthy. By the Lord's mercy is trustworthy. Now here's what Paul's saying. Paul's saying that Jesus Christ never spoke to this issue of married versus single. He never addressed that. And Paul is saying, I'm going to take on this topic, I'm going to address it, but I'm not going to make it in the form of a command. He uses the word judgment there, which is like the word opinion, or he's being very pastoral here. He's saying, this is what I believe, this is what I think, this is what I would prefer, and I'm a person who's proven to be trustworthy. So in the same way that you would listen to a trusted advisor in this passage, Paul is telling you, at least pay attention to these reasons and give this some consideration. So the people that we're addressing in the room today would be people that at some point in time are thinking that they're probably going to get married. So if you're 12, 13, 14, 16, 17, 18, 27, 28, 29, 35, and you've never been married before, 42, this message is for you. Now, for the rest of you in the room who have been married before, or maybe you're married with children and you're thinking to yourself, hey, well, then I can just check out, take a 30-minute nap. I can kind of sleep through this. This is not for me. Let me just say that the attitude of parents and the attitude of the Christian community toward the issue of singleness plays a major role in shaping people's behavior. If someone grows up in a home that from the earliest days, all mom and dad talk about is grandkids, they begin to feel like or think, if I don't get married, if I don't get married to a certain person by a certain time, live in a certain city, make a certain amount of money, and all those things that go along with that, my parents are going to perceive me as a failure. The church can also communicate that by the way we interact or treat people. Oh, you're single? Oh. And the other person's thinking, oh, here's another one that's looking at me going, what's wrong with me? What's my problem? Am I some kind of a misfit because I'm not married? So there's a ton of societal pressure around this issue. And people can begin to feel like, from their parents or from their peers or from the church, that if they don't have somebody to marry, that there is something wrong with you. And so it's important that we listen to what Paul is saying and we think very carefully about what Paul says about the issue of being single or deciding not to get married. So, in this passage, Paul starts out and he says, I'm giving you advice, I'm sharing this with you, someone who's trustworthy, and he says this, verse 26, he says, because of the present crisis, you might want to underline that because that's the context of this, because of the present crisis, I think that it is good for you to remain as you are. Are you married? Do not seek a divorce. Are you unmarried? Do not look for a wife. But if you do marry, you have not sinned. And if a virgin marries, she has not sinned. But those who marry will face many troubles in this life. And I want to spare you this. Now, some of you guys are thinking, some of you married guys are thinking, yeah, Paul's got it figured out. You get married, you got a lot of trouble. That's not what he's talking about here, okay? It's not about that. What Paul is addressing here is a very specific situation in Corinth. He starts out and he says, because of the present crisis, you need to consider remaining single. Because of the trouble associated with marriage in this time, you need to consider remaining single. Now, what is he talking about? Present crisis, the trouble at this time. What he's talking about is the persecution that's coming on the early church. They're in a time of persecution. Paul knows that firsthand because he was one of the ones that was actually persecuting the church. And here's what he's saying. He's saying in a time of intense persecution where people are literally being killed for their faith, it's easier to live a missional lifestyle, to be bold and aggressive with your faith if you don't have to fear the responsibility of a family. Let me give you a personal illustration. A number of years ago, I traveled into Turkmenistan to visit some of the guys that we had been training to plant churches in Turkmenistan. Turkmenistan is a closed country. I don't know how I got in there, but they approved my visa, so I'm in this country. I'm meeting with these guys who are planting churches in a place where the Muslim community beats up, kills, and imprisons people that plant churches. Two gentlemen that I spent quite a bit of time with, Baba Marat and Shoharat, guys that are just giving their life away for the cause of Christ. Both married, both have kids. Shortly after I left, they were in a car accident. And when the police arrived on the scene, they found Bibles And Jesus films in the trunk of their car. They were immediately arrested. They were immediately tortured. They were forced, on pain of execution, to sign over their property, so they had no place to live. Their families were brought in and interrogated, their wives and children. They were told that if they got caught preaching or proclaiming the gospel again, not only would they be imprisoned and potentially killed, but so would their wives and children. They are now living in Canada. They emigrated. Because as a married individual, these men had to decide, like, can we afford to leave our families in harm's way? And they chose not to. Some people choose to, but in their case, they chose not to. Now, in both of those people's cases, had they been single, it would have been a lot easier for them to make a decision to just stay there and suffer whatever fate might come their way as they proclaim the gospel to their countrymen. Because of the present crisis that they were in, they were in a situation where they felt the need to leave to protect their wives and children. Paul is telling them, because of the crisis that's coming on the church, being single makes it easier to maintain a missional focus than being married. That's not just happening in Turkmenistan. In the Sudan today, if you're a Christian husband, chances are you're going to end up dead. Your wife is going to end up being tortured and abused by the militants there. They will conscript your kids into the military. Similar things are happening in Indonesia and some places in northern India. There are places in this world right now where if you're going to live missionally, being single makes it easier than being married. So, as Paul addresses this, he challenges them to consider under these circumstances what might be something that they would take on. Now, you would say, well, like, since we don't have that in the United States, why would I consider this? Well, let me give you the first benefit of remaining single. The first benefit is it provides freedom to take missional risks. It provides freedom to take missional risks. If you're a person that's considering a missional lifestyle of a radical nature, maybe you're presuming to be a missionary and you'd love to go to a closed country, you're going to be a lot better off. You're going to be a lot better off, a lot safer going in by yourself, because then you only got responsibility for yourself. Now, I know married people do that. I know people with families do that. But single people have less burden. Or maybe you're going to live a missional lifestyle in the United States, one that moves you from place to place through church planting or evangelism. So you're not going to gain stability. You're not going to put down roots. You're not going to have the same job. You're going to be moving around and mobile for the kingdom. It's a lot easier to feed yourself than it is to feed a family on an itinerant lifestyle. So remaining single may allow you the opportunity to live a missionally risky lifestyle, and Paul says people need to consider that. Now, some of you would say, like, why in the world would anybody do that? Like, wouldn't it be so much better just to enjoy the life I have here? Well, Paul addresses that in the next group of verses, starting in verse 29. In explaining himself, he says, what I mean, brothers, is that the time is short. In other words, now that the gospel message has come, things have changed. The gospel's here. God's on a plan to get the gospel to the ends of the earth. This world is not permanent. It's temporary. He says, the time is short. From now on, those who have wives should live as if they had none. Those who mourn as if they did not. Those who are happy as if they were not. Those who buy something as if they were not theirs to keep. Those who use the things of this world as if not engrossed by them. For this world in its present form is passing away. What Paul is saying is that the normal course of life for the Christian has now changed. You know, it used to be, people might think, you know, the perfect idyllic life is to get married, to move into a wonderful subdivision, to get my dream home, to get my great career going, to get my kids in the right school, to get them in the right athletics and extracurricular activities, to get them to the right college so they can meet the right person and get the right job, to get my right 401k built up to the status that it needs to be built up to. to retire at the right golf course or the right resort. And maybe along the way I would leave a legacy. You know, maybe I have a patent for something, or I got a degree in something, or I started a foundation, or I did some volunteer work, or something like that along the way to at least say I left a legacy and then I die. And what Paul is saying is no, that's not enough. There's a new way of looking at the world, and it's not simply about what am I going to do to make my life as good as it can be. I need to think less about the stability of my life in the moment and more about the expansion of the kingdom of Jesus Christ. So it's not that I can't have a house, but I don't need to own that house as if it's the most important thing to me. It's not that I can't retire, but I don't need to own my retirement as if that's what I'm living for. That's not what life is about anymore. In fact, he says at the end of this section, he says, for the world is in its present form is passing away. So why would I view this world as all there is? This is all there is. This world in its present form is passing away. So if living missionally is a value, then some of our young people ought to consider completely and totally selling out and going for it full blast. Now, you may be saying, like, that just seems crazy to me. It really does seem kind of crazy, doesn't it? I mean, when you're living in a country where you get all you want, and you can have all you want, and your life can be as wonderful as you want it to be, it seems as crazy as can be. But not only does it seem crazy now, it seemed crazy in Jesus' day as well. In fact, I want to take you to a passage in Matthew chapter 19 where this whole question comes up, and I want you to see what Jesus says. Go to Matthew chapter 19. We're going to start in verse 27. Now, this is the place where Jesus is talking to the rich young ruler. If you remember, he's the guy who had all the money. And Jesus says, sell what you have, give it to the poor, and follow me. And the guy says, hey, there's no way. Man, I got too much. There's too much at stake here to sell out and go after you. And Peter and the other apostles are listening to this discussion. And as they listen to this discussion, they start thinking, duh, we're a bunch of idiots. Like, why did we leave our business and come and follow Jesus? In fact, Peter even says, what's in it for us? Notice what it says. Peter answered him, we have left everything to follow you. What then will there be for us? And Jesus said to them, I tell you the truth, at the renewal of all things, when the Son of Man sits on his glorious throne, you who have followed me also will sit on 12 thrones judging the 12 tribes of Israel, and everyone. Now, who's included in that word everyone? Who would be included in that word everyone? Yeah, no. Most American Christians would not be included in that everyone. Why? Look what it says. And everyone who has left houses or brothers or sisters or fathers or mothers or children or fields, that would be employment, for my sake will receive 100 times as much and will inherit eternal life. But many who are first will be last, and many who are last will be first. Jesus says, if you're willing to set aside much of what you may be able to gather or what you may be able to do to make your life stable, to set that aside for more missional living, you're going to be rewarded for that. And whether you choose to be single so you can sell out completely for Christ, or whether as a married person you make a commitment that you're not going to live in that traditional mindset of me and mine here and now, it's all about me, but you start thinking about living missionally, Jesus says there is great reward for you. Great reward for you for living that way. Second thing to consider about remaining single is it provides freedom for undivided focus on Jesus. You may choose to remain single because it provides freedom for undivided focus on Jesus. Turn back to 1 Corinthians chapter 7, starting in verse 32. He says, I would like you to be free from concern. An unmarried man is concerned about the Lord's affairs, how he can please the Lord, but a married man is concerned about the affairs of this world, how he can please his wife. His interests are divided. An unmarried woman or virgin is concerned about the Lord's affairs. Her aim is to be devoted to the Lord in both body and spirit. But a married woman is concerned about the affairs of this world, how she can please her husband. I'm not saying this for your own, I am saying this for your own good, not to restrict you, but that you may live in a right way in undivided devotion to the Lord. The issue is divided versus undivided devotion. Now, Paul is not saying that when a husband is concerned about the things of the world, how he could please his wife, that that's bad. Or that a wife, when she's concerned about the things of the world so she can please her husband, that that's bad. Paul's not saying that, there's anything wrong with that. In fact, if you're married, you need to spend some of your effort and energy focused on that. In fact, oftentimes when I'm interacting with couples that are thinking about getting married, they have in their mind that they want to get married because of the blessing of marriage. They say, what's the blessing of marriage? Well, some of you have been married a while, you may have forgotten this, but there is a blessing of marriage. You know, there's benefits to being married. You know, some of the benefits are love, intimacy, sexual relationships, children, someone to grow old with, someone to help share the burden. Those things are all benefits of getting married, okay? But most of us don't recognize that there are also burdens as well as blessings. Now, when I say burdens, I mean responsibilities that we have to take on. In Ephesians chapter 5, Paul writes, husbands, love your wives as Christ loved the church. That is unconditional love. No matter how cranky your wife may get, no matter how different she may turn out than what you thought she was going to be, your responsibility, your burden once you get married is to give her unconditional love. It's unconditional love. That's your job, for better or for worse. In addition to that, men, the Bible says you're supposed to provide for your wife. That takes financial that's a financial hardship. You got to get out there and work and make a living and pay the bills. That's your job, men. That's what you're called to do. The Bible tells you to do that. In addition to that, you need to be a godly man so that you can lead your family according to biblical principles. You need to be a good father to your children, not exasperating them, but bringing them up in the admonition, the nurture of the Lord. Those are all hard things to do. And when you get married, you've got responsibility for that. That's the burden. Wives, you also have a burden, a responsibility. In Ephesians chapter 5, it says, wives, respect your husbands. That's unconditional respect. You know what that means? If your husband turns out to be a lot less than what you had hoped, you still need to respect him. He may turn out to be the grumpy old man, just like your father, that you didn't want to have. You still need to respect him. That's your burden. You're responsible for that. In addition to that, you're responsible to be supportive. You're responsible to be spiritual. You're responsible to love your kids as well. You have responsibilities. And what Paul is saying here is there may be some people who say, you know what? I know that marriage is going to take a lot of effort and energy. Sure, the blessings are great. I would love all this stuff. But you know what? I would rather in body and spirit to really be undivided in my focus on Jesus and serving him, and adding the responsibility of being married means that I'm going to have a lot of divided focus, a lot of divided attention, and so I'm going to stay single. So Paul gives those as two reasons that someone may consider to choose a single life and to stay single as a benefit to their ability to serve Jesus Christ. Now, Paul goes on to say, a second principle here in this passage is that remaining single is a choice for each person to make. In other words, this is not a command that you have to do. This is a freedom or a choice that each person gets to make. Notice what he says in verse 35. He says, I'm saying this for your own good, not to restrict you. That word restrict means to put a noose around your neck or kind of a slip knot choking you. He says, I'm not saying, like, that I'm trying to restrict you, to keep you from getting married if you want to. I'm just telling you that you need to at least consider this, because this may be the best thing for you if you're single. Then he goes on to give the specific example. He says, if anyone thinks he's acting improperly toward the virgin he is engaged to. Now, some of your translations may be translating, if any father thinks he's acting improperly toward his virgin daughter. There's a big debate whether the person in question here is the father who's giving his daughter away in marriage, or whether the question is the guy who's already engaged to a woman making the decision. Let me just tell you, in both cases, there are problems on both sides textually. In one case, you have to add the word engaged, which the NIV does. In the other case, you have to add the word father, because neither father nor engaged occur in the text. It just says if a man has a virgin and he feels like he's acting improperly toward her. I personally believe that the strength of the arguments captured in the NIV, that this is talking about a guy who is engaged. He comes to faith, he starts reevaluating his life now that he's in Jesus Christ, and he starts asking himself the question, do I really believe that I ought to go through with this wedding? You know, we're engaged, the engagement period back in those days were typically long. I'm just wondering if I ought to go through this wedding. So Paul's going to give him advice here. Notice what he says. He says, if anyone thinks he's acting improperly toward the virgin he is engaged to, and if she is getting along in years and he feels he ought to marry, he should do as he wants. He's not sinning. They should get married. But the man who has settled the matter in his own mind, who is under no compulsion but has control over his own will, who has made up his mind not to marry the virgin, this man also does the right thing. So then he who marries the virgin does right, but he who does not marry her does even better. So what Paul is saying is, under the circumstances of that time, with all that persecution, you have freedom as a single person to choose either way. But considering the circumstances, Paul's saying you ought to really think twice about whether this is the right decision for you. So whether a person chooses to get married or whether a person chooses to remain single, that's up to you. There is no command, which should imply to you, moms and dads, and to me as a dad, I've got two college-age kids, that God may call my kids to be single. That may be something they choose to do. I need to be okay with that. I need to affirm that. That's a legitimate option for each person to choose. And we in the church need to be okay with that. We need to affirm that. That's an okay thing. And we need to quit making single people feel like there's something wrong with them. Because if they're choosing to follow Jesus, and that precludes finding a mate, back off. Let them go that path. That's a freedom that they have. But if somebody wants to get married, that's fine too. And in a culture like ours today, probably most will get married. That's okay. That's fine. We have freedom in that. But there's some questions you need to ask yourself, single person. If you're considering remaining single, there's a couple big questions that Paul raises in this passage that you need to ask yourself. The first question is, can I maintain sexual purity? Can I maintain sexual purity? In other words, choosing to be single is also choosing to be celibate. Sex is for marriage. So that doesn't mean you just kind of live with a person and then another person, or you have kind of a friends with benefits on the side to kind of take care of that activity in your life. If you choose to be single, you're choosing to be celibate. And Paul addresses that right here in the passage. Notice what he says in verse 36. He says, if anyone thinks he is acting improperly toward the virgin he is engaged to, that word improperly there connotes indecency, or he feels like he's getting physically involved with her, and that's the wrong thing for him to be doing, or he's thinking about it. In fact, it goes on in verse 37, and it says, if a person has control over his own will, that word control also has sexual connotations. In fact, we saw that word in verse 9, where it says that if a person doesn't have control over himself sexually, he needs to get married, because it's better to get married than it is to be out of control sexually. So here's what Paul is saying. He's saying, take a look at yourself, men. Take a look at yourself, women. If you think to yourself, I'm the kind of person who just has to have intimacy Like, I just know myself. I know I'm a physical person. I know I'm a sensual person. I know I'm the kind of person who will never make it single and celibate. Then you need to get married. And there's nothing wrong with that. God's made us with a sexual drive, sexual attraction. And there are some people in this world who say, you know, I feel those things, but they're not dominating my life. They don't overwhelm me. I have freedom in that. So I have the option to choose. But, you know, if you can't, you need to get married, Paul says. Second question you have to ask yourself is, can I overcome societal pressure? Can I overcome the societal pressure? Look at verse 37. He says, but the man who has settled the matter in his own mind, who is under no compulsion, but has control over his own will, and who has made up his mind not to marry the virgin, you see, he repeats it over and over again. If you've got this figured out, it's settled in your mind, you've got control over yourself, it's clear that this is what you believe is the right thing to do, this man also does the right thing not to marry. Keep in mind, there will always be pressure from the people around you who are married to get you married. And if you're going to cave into that, if you're constantly going to be questioning yourself, thinking, oh, what's wrong with me? Oh, if I was a really good person, I'd be married. If that's what's going to happen to you and it's going to crush you, then go ahead and get married. Because you need to know that society in general is going to push you toward marriage. Now, let me just say a word to the married people. Before you become the matchmaker, you need to talk to your friends who are single and find out whether that's what they desire. I've talked to single people this week who said, man, what are my married friends, you know, why do I have to go out on the internet to find somebody? Why are my married friends not helping me out? And if you've got a friend who believes that God wants them to get married, they're looking to get married, by all means, help them out. But if they're not, you need to back off and leave them alone. Don't be trying to set someone up that doesn't believe that's God's will for their life. It will hurt them. It puts pressure on them. So have honest dialogue with your single friends about where you feel like they ought to be. And if they want you to set them up, go for it. And if they don't want you to set them up, leave them alone. Can I overcome societal pressure? The third question to ask yourself is this: if I choose to marry, can I make a lifelong commitment to the right person? If I choose to marry, can I make a lifelong commitment to the right person? Look at verse 40. Look at verse 39. A woman is bound to her husband as long as he lives. That's the commitment of marriage. I married you, for better or for worse, I'm bound to you as long as you live. It's a lifelong commitment. And everybody needs to ask the question, can I make a lifelong commitment to somebody? Because if I can't make a lifelong commitment to somebody, I have no business getting married. That's what I'm promising when I get married. He's bound to a woman, or she's bound to her husband as long as he lives, but if her husband dies, she's free to marry anyone she wishes. So widows are free to marry anyone they wish. Widowers are free to marry anyone they wish, but he says he must belong to the Lord. The right person is somebody that's a believer in Jesus Christ. So when you're ready to make a lifelong commitment and you've found someone that's a believer in Jesus Christ, you're free to remarry. But Paul goes on to say, in my judgment, and consider the circumstances of persecution, she is happier if she stays as she is, and I think too, I have the Spirit of God. Let me just say a couple more words as we wrap up. Those people who are considering getting married, it is the second biggest decision of your life besides your relationship with Christ. Do not go into this thing lightly. We could line up a group of people who are sitting in this room right now who would tell you, I wish I would have listened to my parents. I wish I would have listened to my friends. I wish I would have listened to my brain. Because I don't know what I was thinking, but when I got married, I wasn't ready. That other person wasn't ready. We weren't the right people. And we dove into this thing, and we were not willing to slow it down and to get premarital counseling and to listen to the people in our lives and potentially even break it off. I did a wedding for the most wonderful couple. a number of years ago, and we just buried her father about 3 years ago. He passed away, and I saw him at the wedding with their three kids, and they just had the greatest relationship in the world. And the guy she was engaged to before him, they sat in my office together, and she cried as she said, "I hear what you're telling me, Tim. Like, this is not going to be a good relationship. I don't want to break it off. I love him." She broke it off. I just can't tell you how tragic it would have been had she married the guy. It would have been tragic. Listen. Pay attention. This is a big decision. Get premarital counseling. Get advice from your parents. Get people in your life to speak into your life. You need to make sure that you do not enter into marriage lightly. And one of the ways of entering into marriage lightly is to shack up before you get married, because that will cloud your decision making in so many ways. It just will. Second thing I just want to say to our church is, just because a person is single does not mean that they are outside of a family. Single people need a family. There are emotional needs, there are social needs, there are spiritual needs, relational needs. There are all kinds of needs that are still present. And one of the burdens of my heart is that we would have a church that truly became a place where we saw lots and lots of singles gather, where it would be a good environment for people to meet their spouse in a godly place and marry, where it would be a supportive place for single moms who are trying to raise kids and they need some input into their lives. They need help. It would be a place where a widower, we've had a number of men lose their wives in the last year. We've had some women lose their husbands. Where it would be a community that would invite those people in and help them heal. I mean, we're beginning to pray and ask God, "God, would you give us 1,000 people that fit in that young singles category, 19, 18, 19 to 30? That's why we started the College Connection, Cindy and I did, because we've got over 300 college students right now that are loosely connected with Hill Country Bible Church that need a place to connect, to grow. It's my prayer that we would have 500, a community of 500 singles in the 35 and up category that are connected. It's a ministering community. They're meeting one another's needs, that are creating a social environment, a spiritual environment. So if a person says, "You know what? I'm going to remain single," there's still a family at Hill Country Bible Church that's going to support me and encourage me and meet those relational needs. And I'm asking you guys to pray with me and work with us to create that kind of an environment. Because what we're telling most of our people is, if you really, truly want to be whole, go out into the world, find someone to marry, and then come back, because we do real well with married people. Y'all come on back then, and we'll welcome you in, you fit in, have something for your kids, we'll take care of you. And what we need to be saying is that of all the places in Austin to meet your future spouse, or to make a decision, you're going to stay single, and you're going to have a family to meet your needs, that this church is the place for that to happen. Would you guys pray with me about that? Let's bow our heads. Father in heaven, I just ask that you would do amazing things here in this church. Father, that we would be a place where people could come together and be loved on and cared for and have their needs met. Father, that we would be a place that embraces both married and single, and what God's doing in each life, where we would be a place where a woman could meet a man that's a godly man and they could form a marriage. Or a woman could choose to live her life outside of marriage and she would have friends and support and structure to care for her. Father, it's our prayer that we would be the church right here in Northwest Austin that can meet the needs of the singles in this community. We pray this in Jesus' name. Amen.